Hello everyone, this is Omar Alvarado of theparadoodler.com, the blog for all things drumming. Thanks for listening into this podcast. Many of us drummers are always looking for ways to improve our skills behind the kit. We take private lessons, there's online instruction now, has been for a while, DVDs, and on and on. Over time, there are specific skills we determine we should work on more than others, but certainly one of those skills that receives a lot of attention is bass drum play. It seems like everyone is always looking for ways to improve bass drum speed and finding ways to implement different techniques to increase speed and efficiency. Well, today we have someone with us who I consider somewhat of a quiet pioneer in regards to bass drum play, and he's authored a very interesting approach to this area of drumming concern. He's the author of the DVD Unburying the Beater, and it's my pleasure now to have Matt Ritter with us on theparadoodler.com. Matt, how are you?
Hey, Omar. Thanks. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Matt, I'd like to start off. What I'd like to do is ask a little bit about your background in music, how you got into it, and how you eventually got into drumming as well. If you want to give us a little detail regarding that.
Yeah, sure. I started out really just being interested in music in general. When I was, I've often told this story, and it's kind of a funny one. When I was a little kid, like literally maybe 5, 6 years old, they had the Top 40 countdown on Sunday afternoons with Casey Kasem, and I used to wake up and I would sit in front of the radio, and I was devoted to like listening to the entire Top 40 countdown. And I remember my parents would sometimes say, okay, you know, guys, we got to go out for the afternoon, or we're going to lunch or whatever. And I would be so upset. It's like, no, you know, we're up to like song number 9. I got to stay and hear the rest of the countdown. So I was really kind of infatuated with music from an early age, and especially the rhythmic side. You know, my grandmother was a professional dancer. She ran her own dance studio. And I remember her mentioning a few times that the drummer was the person in the band that kept the time. And of course, I had no idea what that meant. I literally didn't know, like, does that mean that they somehow keep track of how long each song is? What does it mean they keep the time? I didn't really know, but I knew it was something important, you know?
Right.
So I would say I was around 10 years old, and there was a little old lady that taught music lessons at my elementary school, and she basically taught every instrument, you know, so you could sign up for whatever you wanted. And I signed up for drum lessons, and it's kind of funny because I only ended up taking one lesson before I quit. I went, and she had us playing on these little coffee can lids, you know, like the Folgers coffee can lids. So it was kind of like a makeshift practice pad, although at the time I didn't know what a practice pad was. So we had these coffee can lids, and we had these sticks, and we were just tapping rhythms, you know. And to me, it didn't really sound anything like drumming. It didn't have anything to do with the music I was listening to on the radio. So I was kind of disillusioned by the whole thing, and I only went that one time. And I kept listening to music. At that time, rap had just come on the scene. So, you know, believe it or not, rap was my number one favorite music for years there. And, as we know, that's a music that's very rhythmic. There's, it's very, I guess you could say it's beat driven. And so I was really into it, you know, the rhythmic side of music again. And when I was 15, my parents got me a little thing called Sensonic drums. I don't think they make it anymore, but basically it was a little box. It had like four little circles on it.
And I remember those.
You remember those things? Yeah, it'd be, you know, you'd hit it, it'd be like, boom, bop, bang, bang, you know, this kind of thing. And but it was just enough to tap a beat on. So I would just hit like the tom pad and the snare pad, and I would just be doo ka doo doo ka doo ka doo 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 ka, and I would play along with the radio and play along to records. And after just a couple of months of doing that, I decided, you know, I want to get a drum set. So I found a drum set for sale in this newspaper called The Bargain News. It's kind of a classified ads newspaper in Connecticut where I grew up, bought a drum set, and that was it. So to sort of recap, I had that one lesson when I was 10, took about five and a half years off, and then started again, and I've been going ever since. I mean, to this day, I still study drums. I still love drums. I've taken lessons with. I was just counting it up recently. I've actually had lessons with 19 different teachers over the years. Yeah, some of them, you know, about half of them were guys that I just went and took like one lesson with or two lessons with, just to you know, pick their brain on certain topics. And then the other half were long-term mentors. You know, so that's it. That's how it started, and I'm still on the journey.
Well, sometimes it's that one lesson with that one instructor that might even be more impactful than all the other ones. It's that one thing that kind of like there's a light bulb moment, like, oh, okay, I didn't see it that way.
Absolutely. I definitely had a few of those, you know, and I know you mentioned the bass drum stuff in your intro. And so, of course, we're going to talk about bass drum. And, you know, I had a few of those just kind of sudden aha moments in lessons that turned things around for me with the bass drum. And then, of course, you know, as I said, there have been other teachers who've just been ongoing mentors to me. I mean, even right now, I've been taking lessons I think this September it'll be 4 years. I've been taking lessons with a contemporary jazz teacher out in New Jersey. I drive out there twice a month. In fact, I just drove there this morning. So, you know, it's just like I've been a consistent and constant student of drumming. So I don't intend to stop.
Well, that's an important lesson, too, because it doesn't matter how much you know. Even, like, drummers that I admire a lot, like Neil Peart, for example, they're looking for people to show him still new things that or change some method that he wants to improve. So everybody can learn at any time. There's no stopping there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So how about then, so you got on your musical journey here, and then there are certain, I know we spoke in the past about different jobs you had.
Yep.
In the music field. Can you talk maybe how, you know, what you learned got you into the industry? Not necessarily maybe teaching, but maybe some other jobs that you were involved with that were that had to do with music.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so, you know, when I was in college, I was majoring in music business management with a minor in music, and one of the requirements was that you did an internship, something in the music business. And at that time, I was a huge fan of DCI Music Video. I don't know if people know about that anymore, but it's basically, these days they call it Hudson Music. You know, it's Rob Wallace and Paul Siegel, these two guys that had the idea of taking the great drummers like Steve Gadd and people like that and filming them. So I had a collection of DCI music videos, and I had the idea that I could maybe do my internship at DCI Music Video. So I literally just got on the phone and just called them up and just asked them if I could do it. And unbelievably, they said, you know, we have this huge project coming up, and we really are actually going to need some help. We're going to, you know, we're shorthanded, and if you want to do your internship with us, we would be thrilled to have you. So this was kind of like a dream come true for me. I couldn't believe that easily, just by asking, you know, just by taking a chance and, you know,
taking a little initiative.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes that's all it takes. Sometimes we can sit back and just come up with all the reasons why it won't work or something. And, I just took this risk. I called them up and, I was in. So the project ended up being something called Burning for Buddy. Have you heard of this? I know you're a big Neil Peart fan.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yep.
All right. So for some of the folks that might hear this that don't know about it, Neil Peart decided that he wanted to do a tribute to Buddy Rich. So he rented out he booked out a recording studio in Manhattan, New York, and he basically hired the Buddy Rich Orchestra to be in there for two straight weeks. And then he contacted all these famous drummers, and he had each guy come in and play a song or two with the band. And this was an ongoing thing for 2 weeks. And Neil Peart was the producer of the whole thing. And he recorded it and he put out these albums called Burning for Buddy. I think there were two volumes.
Yeah, two volumes, yeah.
And you know, DCI Music Video was there to film the whole thing, to document it. So I was right there with them. I was helping them film. I was I had a notepad. I was writing down, what was going on, which take ended up being the keeper take and so forth. And so here I am. It's my first 2 weeks on the job, it's my first 2 weeks doing anything in the music industry, and I'm meeting all the great drummers. I'm interacting with Neil Peart because he's the one running the whole thing. I meet Dave Weckl and Greg Bissonette, and Max Roach came by and did some drum solos. Matt Sorum, Steve Gadd. I mean, you name it. Everybody, everybody was there. Neil Peart tried to get the best of the best of the best, and so that started my relationship with DCI Music Video. And at the time, I didn't know that they were actually the same two guys that had been the owners of the Drummers Collective. So I continued there. After I graduated from college, I went right back to working with DCI and at Drummers Collective. The job basically ended up being me working in the office of the Drummers Collective, and then kind of on the side helping the DCI guys whenever they would have a video project come up. And it was in retrospect, it was a really important time in my life because first of all, I was surrounded by all these amazing drummers and amazing teachers, and I also had access to lessons with a lot of these people. So I was taking lessons. This gets back to the 19 drum teachers. Well, I was sitting there at the Drummers Collective for over 3 years. So you'd take a lesson with this guy one day, and a lesson with another one this day, and maybe you'd have one teacher that you'd continue on for with a couple of years, I met Jim Chapin through the Drummers Collective. I was having some hand problems, literally hand technique problems, but also, physically having hand problems. I had carpal tunnel syndrome, which was bumming me out. And
is that due to your drumming technique, or is that just something that's coming on from something else?
Yeah, it was a little of everything. I spent most of my college years riding a motorcycle, and I spent a lot of time on the highway riding back and forth from my hometown to my college. And they say that the vibrations from holding the handlebars has been known to give people carpal tunnel syndrome too. So between riding the motorcycle and then drumming out hours and hours a day and not necessarily using proper technique doing so, I think it just accumulated until I had a problem that needed to be worked out. Since I saw that Jim Chapin was on our roster of teachers, but I didn't see him around that often, but I said, well, if anyone can get him in here, I can, because I'm the guy who runs the front desk of the office. So I, right. So I'm like, I got him in here. So I called him up and said, hey, how would you feel about coming in and doing a day of lessons, And so he did that, and I did a 2-hour lesson with him. And then I just kept bringing him back. So, it was maybe a couple times a month or something like that. I would have lessons with Jim Chapin. So he ended up actually being a somewhat long-term teacher of mine, because of my association there at the Drummers Collective,
So that definitely was a dream job for a drummer, particularly.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I remember just sitting there at the desk and suddenly Elvin Jones walks in the door, and so this kind of thing was common. I mean, you would see just these famous drummers walking in and out. Some of them would be major legends like Elvin, or other times it'd be somebody you'd kind of recognize their face, but you couldn't quite, put your finger on who it was. Maybe it was just somebody who had a little appearance in Modern Drummer magazine once or something. So there were like professional drummers of every level, from guys starting out to people in the mid range up to the all-time legends, just kind of walking around all the time. It was a really neat thing. I mean, it also gave me a job in New York, so it allowed me to just move to New York and have an income and be in the city where I wanted to be at that time to keep studying drums.
That's awesome. So you have all this exposure, you're learning all the time.
Yeah.
I think, many drummers come to a point where they're kind of comfortable with their technique, but then after a while they start getting a little antsy too. So was there a time in your career where you thought that you needed to revisit your drumming technique and particularly your bass drum play?
Yeah, well, here's the thing with the bass drum technique for me. The truth is I was horrible at playing the bass drum for, you know, like a good 10 years. So it wasn't really one moment where I said, I've got to revisit this. To tell you the truth, Omar, it was kind of an ongoing source of frustration for me from
right.
the very beginning. You know, I mean, when I was yep. learning drums, perhaps like yourself, I mean, nobody mentioned anything about the techniques that eventually end up in my video. It was always heel down or heel up. It was kind of like, those are your options. And I went back and forth between heel down and heel up from 89 to 99 with very little success. I mean, I could play single strokes, but I couldn't really play double strokes. So, you know, if I felt like a song had a double stroke in it, or, you know, or it would benefit from a double stroke, I would just have to do a single stroke instead. And then I was getting a lot of different information from people. This person would say, you got to play heel down all the time. This person would say, you got to play heel up. Someone else would say, well, you use each one depending on the situation. And I tried all versions of that, and I never really arrived at anything that worked for me. I was just frustrated. I didn't like my sound on the bass drum. I couldn't do double strokes very effectively. My leg would cramp up. So it was something I was always on the lookout for, you know, a way to play the bass drum differently. And I remember when I was at college, Spyro Gyra played at our college once.
Yeah.
And there was this great drummer in the band named Joel Rosenblatt. I don't know if you know of him, but he was, you know, a great, great drummer. And so I literally ran up on the stage after the concert while he was packing his drums. And I asked him if he would show me how he plays the bass drum, you know. So and he was a really cool guy, too. So he took a moment, and he didn't have any real specific advice, but he just kind of put his foot on his pedal. You know, half the kit was broken down. He said, well, I kind of do this, you know. And I wasn't really sure what it was exactly, but the point is I was asking the question, you know, and
right.
You know, if you ask a question enough times, eventually I think an answer comes to you. So that's what I did. I kept asking people like that. I kept, you know, I would go to clubs and see people play, and I would sit, you know, behind the drums and watch their foot. It kind of became like an obsession of mine, trying to figure out how to play the bass drum in some fashion that would work for me, something beyond the heel down and heel up that I was already so frustrated with.
Yeah, many of us drummers are frustrated with that.
Yeah.
Me to this day, it is a source of frustration, but definitely, you know, with practice, it does get better.
Yeah.
I also wanted to go on this slant, so to speak. So now a little time goes by,
yep.
and your bass drum technique is better, because now you're seeing how you can maybe incorporate both methods, heel up, heel down, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So at what point did the idea start to blossom that maybe you could actually teach this method of bass drum play? Was it during this time or after you got kind of comfortable with it? You said, you know what, I think I could make an instructional video of this or something like that.
Yeah, good question. Well, let me answer that by backtracking a little bit, because I do think it's important to mention exactly how I eventually discovered the technique that I
sure use. Yeah.
And I want to make sure I give credit where it's due, you know. I had one of the many teachers I had was a teacher at the Drummers Collective named Brad Flickinger, you know, and Brad was a Broadway drummer. I'm sure he still is. And during one of our lessons, I was asking him about this bass drum issue of mine, because I ask everybody, and he said, well, you know, I just kind of do this, and he just showed me just a single stroke, you know, in the fashion that I demonstrate in the video, where the heel comes down, the beater rebounds off, and that was the first time that I had seen that. And you know, he didn't really go into a lot of details about it. It didn't turn into a whole thing, but it just put this seed in my mind that there was this way of playing the bass drum that wasn't exactly heeled down, but it wasn't really what I thought of as heel up either. And so from there, I started, you know, I started practicing it, trying to figure out exactly what it was that I had seen Brad do, and how exactly I could, you know, not only replicate it, but if there was a way I could come to understand it so that I could teach it to other people, because I was teaching students too, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, so, and then I also had a, we talked before about sometimes doing a one-time lesson with somebody. So one of the guys I did a one-time lesson with was a Brazilian drummer named Adriano Santos. And mm-hmm. he plays, you know, great samba and bossa nova and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of times in that music, you'll have this repeated double stroke on the bass drum. And, you know, double strokes had always been my nightmare. So mm-hmm. I went and had a lesson with him, and I watched him play the bass drum, and it seemed like he was doing something that was kind of like rocking his foot, almost some sort of going back and forth between his toe and his heel, and the heel portion of it looked a bit like the thing that Brad had showed me. So anyway, that's kind of the story. I took those pieces, put it together and practiced it, and came up with something that worked, and I developed a little series of exercises that I found helpful to me, and that I started showing to my students. So where the idea for the video and everything came was that I wrote an article for Modern Drummer, and the article was called Unburying the Beater. And the reason I called it that was because, you know, when we play heel up, typically we hold the beater against the bass drum, right. And, you know, we bury the beater, so to speak. And, you know, it had become a joke with me and my students. When my students would come in, you know, they might say, well, what are we going to work on today? And I'd say, well, we're going to work on unburying that beater of yours, because I found something I think you're going to like better. So, okay, so today we're working on unburying the beater. So it was kind of a little joke, you know. And so I wrote this article for Modern Drummer called Unburying the Beater. And it was really, it was crazy. Omar, I had written an article for Modern Drummer once before about reading, the value of reading, and I thought it was a okay article, but I mean, I never got any feedback or anything like that. I just wrote the article, it was published, it was like, oh, my article's published, and that was it. But when this bass drum article got published in Modern Drummer, suddenly I literally started receiving emails, like, constantly from drummers all over the world, saying that they either, you know, just wanted to tell me they liked the article, or that it was helpful, or wanting more information about it. And it wasn't just a handful of emails. I mean, there was several months there where I was just on an ongoing basis. This kind of became part of what I did, was answering emails about the Modern Drummer article.
Yeah.
And one day I get one of these emails, and it's from a major, major drumming celebrity, you know, easily one of the most famous drummers ever, kind of a household name guy, and saying, it was a very brief email actually, just saying, please call me about the bass drum, something like that, with his phone number. And I was like, is this a put on?
Right.
What is this? You know, so I'm like completely nervous, and I don't know what's happening. Is this maybe even a joke from a friend of mine or something? So I call him, and it turns out it's not a joke. It's actually the guy. And he says, you know, he says, I've been playing drums since I was like 5 years old. Now, he's in his 50s at the time he calls. I call him, right? So he says, I'm playing drums since I'm about 5 years old, and I've never been happy with the way I play the bass drum. Do you think you could help me?
Sure.
well, yeah, I think I could. He's like, okay, because I've been, you know, I saw your article in Modern Drummer, and I've been practicing the exercises. But since I found out you live right here in town, I want to come by and have you teach this to me in person. So I can't believe this, you know. So we meet. Sure enough, it's really him. I give him the lesson. Who, by the way, the guy turns out to be literally one of the nicest, like, most sincere students I've ever had. I mean, he comes in, he's got a notebook. So here's me, you know, this total, like, unknown, like, local drum teacher guy. And here's this drumming phenomenon who's there with his notepad, and he's asking me questions, and he's got a list of questions, and he's taking notes on what I'm saying. And, you know, I can't believe it. And it's kind of this surreal thing. And So then we finished the lesson, and I figured, okay, that's probably going to be the end of it, because now he realizes, you know, he doesn't need me and, you know, whatever. So a couple weeks go by, and I hear from him again, and he says, I've been practicing everything you told me, and I want to come back for round two, you know. So I've still got some questions. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is like unbelievable. So, yeah. So we do the second lesson, and he's, sure enough, he's been practicing it, and he's been even making up his own variation on some of the exercises. He took a page from Syncopation book, and he was playing like a rock hand pattern, you know, with his hands, with his sticks, and on the bass drum, he's reading the notes from the Syncopation page, but he's trying to use the system that I had been teaching him. So anyway, to make a long story short, between the emails I got from drummers all over the place about the Modern Drummer article, and then having somebody who's a major household name drummer tell me that, you know, that he wanted more information about this topic, it just clicked for me that, you know what, maybe I'm not the only person out there that's been frustrated with this bass drum stuff. And maybe, you know, what I have here, this information, you know, it may not be, you know, the final word on everything, but what I've figured out so far is helpful. It's helpful to me, and other people are finding it helpful. Let me find a way to put it out there more strongly and in more detail. So that's why I decided to make the video.
That's interesting, that term you use, not the final say.
Yeah.
Because really, there's a lot of ways to look at certain techniques,
yeah.
But this definitely is one that maybe, you know, is not taught,
right,
basically, in general. So
right,
it's definitely a way to look at it and to explore. It's worth looking at. So now, Matt, now you have all of this enthusiasm, I would say,
yeah,
to get this, you know, put together. So I'm sure that preparing that DVD took a lot of time, a lot of your time,
yeah,
and like emotional and mental toll on you. So
yeah,
how did, you know, without going into a ton of details, but, you know, how much preparation went into making that so that you can make it a convincing argument for this method that isn't commonly taught?
Yeah, good question. Well, you know, preparing for the video became kind of my, almost my full-time job for, I'm not sure exactly, maybe it was a month, something like that. Omar, no joke, I was working on that thing, you know, while still teaching, which is my full-time job, teaching lessons. But in addition to that, I was working on writing the script, so to speak, for the Unbearing the Beater video, maybe 12 hours a day or more, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, and there were days if I didn't have to go teach, there were days I'd wake up in the morning, I wouldn't even bother getting dressed. I would just pull out the notepad, start writing, and I would just take a few breaks for food, and I would just write, you know, clear up to midnight or whatever, and then go to bed, and then get ready to do the same thing the next day. I wanted to make sure that everything in the video was as clear as possible, and you know, that every statement was concise. So I wrote a script. You know, it's kind of funny. So you know, one of the downsides to the video that some reviewers have noted is that it's, you know, it's long, there's a lot of talking, and that I talk kind of slow and somewhat monotonous, you know. I totally get that. You know, what they don't know is that I'm reading off a teleprompter there.
Yeah.
So that's not really the way I walk around just in normal life talking. But it was important. I didn't want to just wing it, because I knew that this was important, because it was something that hadn't been really discussed before, as far as I could tell. And when I took on the, you know, this idea of expressing it, I wanted to make sure that it was really clear and thorough. So there were, you know, like I said, maybe a month or so at least of just working day and night on the script that I later, you know, read off the teleprompter, and also sitting at the drums and practicing some of the exercises to just further understand my, you know, my own foot, what exactly it was doing. You know, I wanted to, it's one thing to just kind of do it by feel. It's another thing to understand what the heck you're actually doing, because you want to be able to explain it to someone else, you know?
Sure.
So yeah. That was that. Yeah.
Well, I have gone through the whole video, and I have to commend you. It's very well articulated. I'm a stickler for that kind of detail, and it shows that you really didn't leave anything out as far as making sure the viewer understands what it is you're explaining. So I'll give you kudos for that. It's very well put together that way.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. That's what I was going for.
Yep. So now the video is complete.
All right.
And it's out there. So what was the reaction maybe that you were expecting, both from like professional drummers and amateurs? And did you get the reaction you expected?
Wow, good question. I'll tell you, I wasn't sure exactly what to expect. I'll tell you, because I feel like, in probably every field, and certainly in drumming, when you present something that goes a little bit against the norm, sometimes there is a backlash, you know? We see it all the time. I mean, I know you check out the drum forums and stuff like I do. And, we see these heated debates about traditional grip versus matched grip and open-handed drumming versus close-handed drumming. And so sometimes when we present something that's slightly unorthodox, there can be a backlash. So I wasn't sure if there would be some kind of backlash or if maybe the whole thing would just, you know, go completely unnoticed. I didn't know, but I can tell you honestly that I felt that I had produced something that was unique, because I had never seen a video that explained this technique. I hadn't seen a video that really explained too much bass drum technique at all. Most of the videos that touched on bass drum would always touch on the rhythms. Like, well, here's a bass drum rhythm. You could do four notes with the hands and two notes with the foot to be a sextuplet, or, you know, you'd have something like that, but it wouldn't exactly talk too much about the foot movement. So I really thought that I had come up with something that was unique, and I really hoped with all my heart that it would have a place in the drumming world and fill a gap that there seemed to be. And I think, in terms of the response I got, I think that I it was basically mission accomplished. I did, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback over the years. There's been maybe a very tiny number of people that mentioned that they didn't like the video or whatever, but there's always going to be that. But really, it seemed like the huge majority of reviews and feedback I got was very positive, and a lot of it came from people who'd been drumming for years and years and said, thank you for doing this. I I've been drumming 30 years and I've been teaching for 15 years. And, this really helped me to move forward in an area that I didn't think I'd ever move forward in. And I was like, that's exactly what happened to me when I started practicing this. So it's been great to share that.
And for those who haven't seen it yet, there is a review of Unbearing the Beater at theparadiddler.com under the review section. So if you haven't seen that yet, it's very thorough and it answers a lot of questions there. So
yeah,
I liked it, by the way.
Thank you. And I liked the review much. You wrote. Really, that definitely wins the award for the most thorough review. I mean, he's got still good pictures there, and it really goes into great detail about what the video covers. So thank you, Omar. Really.
Yeah, you're welcome. I did want to do it justice, because it was a thorough video, so there had to be a thorough review in kind,
nice,
so to speak. So, okay, so now if you could pinpoint one aspect of the DVD that you think you should have covered more, what do you think that would be? I know that on one of your websites, I think you go into that a little bit, but what would be something that you, after, in retrospect, you're like, well, maybe I could have talked about that a little more?
Yeah. I think two things, and I as you mentioned, I talk about these on my website, one of my websites. One would be double bass. The video basically shows my foot on a single bass drum pedal, and you know, and the truth is I never really got into double bass that much. So, you know, it's not like I was some double bass drum virtuoso that was just holding out on you and didn't want to give away my secrets or something. I basically played single bass for most of my drumming life. The past handful of years I've been playing double bass as well. But I knew at the time that I made the video, I knew that if it works for one foot, it's going to work for two. And I confirmed, yeah. I confirmed this by, you know, taking a double bass drum pedal. I actually, at that time, I didn't even have one. I borrowed one from a student of mine. And, you know, and I sat with the thing and I checked it. And I said, are there any issues that come up here trying to use this with 2 feet instead of one? And I concluded that there really weren't, that it was, you know, that what applies to one foot applies to two, but you know, there are a few little things you just have to keep in mind to synchronize the 2 feet together. So I made a note of that in the frequently asked questions section of the video where, you know, one of the frequently asked questions is something like, can this be used for double bass? And I explained right. very briefly how a person would go about using it for double bass. But you know, a lot of, you know, but I think a lot of people just saw me playing with one foot and just immediately jumped to the conclusion that it can only be used for one foot. Or maybe they didn't even check out the frequently asked questions section. Or, you know, in addition to that, let's face it, seeing something and having somebody demonstrate it is generally a more effective way of teaching something than just mentioning it in passing in a frequently asked question. So, you know, right. So if I were going to do the video now, or a follow-up video, I would call it Unburying the Beaters with an S.
Right. You know? And,
yeah.
That's cool.
I would show the techniques on one foot and then show how it applies to both feet.
I think it's good to do it that way, though, the way you did it, because it's really you're spending most of your time on one foot anyway.
Yeah.
Unless you're a speed metal drummer, that kind of thing. But for the most part, it really is about the one foot and throwing the other foot in for good measure. You know,
yeah,
that's sort of like an extra, so to speak. So it is, but it is a topic to be covered as far as double bass goes. So
absolutely,
yeah. So what pedal do you use, by the way? Now, because you are a bass drum expert now, so everybody would want to know what pedal do you use these days.
Well, okay. So my current favorite pedal at the moment is the Pearl Power Shifter Eliminator.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just love that thing. Now, the reason is...
Is it a double pedal or a single?
Yes, it's a double pedal.
Okay.
And, you know, basically the reason I like it so much is just because I just find it to be so adjustable. That's the thing. I mean, I can do my techniques on any pedal. That's, you know, that's important to note, too, especially as we start talking about pedals, because, you know, I can almost see it coming back to me that, oh, so this only works on this pedal or something. And, you know, I've certainly had students insist on bringing their pedal into their lesson because they have convinced themselves that, you know, this can't be done on their pedal, and then they bring it in, we put it on the drum, and I do it with their pedal. So the techniques certainly work on any pedal. I can do it on any pedal, but the Power Shifter Eliminator for me gives me you know, the maximum adjustability. I mean, you can adjust the beater angle, the spring tension, you can shift the footboard itself back and forth, which is why they call it the Power Shifter. And it's got these removable cams that snap into place that change whether it's a you know, just a linear feel, or whether you know, whether the throw of the beater accelerates as you approach the head, stuff like that. And I just found it more adjustable than any of the other pedals on the market currently. So that's the one I'm currently using, and who knows, maybe that's going to, you know, change next time we talk, but for the moment, that's the one.
Sure. So, okay, you kind of answered my next question indirectly, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Sure.
So, as far as the DVD goes, then, if there was one main point that you wanted the viewer to get from it, what would that be?
I think the main thing I'd want the viewer to get from it is that you don't need to suffer and struggle playing just heel down or heel up. I mean, in a nutshell, that's the message, right? There is another option. And frankly, it's a less obvious option, and it's not as intuitive as the other two. I think when a person just looks at a bass drum pedal, they immediately envision playing heel down. And then if you say, well, stomp your leg and make it louder, you're going to have them play heel up. So within 2 seconds, you could get a complete novice playing heel down and heel up. They're not going to be a master at it, but they can do it. I think the techniques in my video, they're a little less obvious. I think that's why a lot of people haven't ended up discovering them on their own, and they generally need to be taught, I think, for someone to get it. But yeah, the main message of the video would be, hey, there is another option. Just, you're just going to have to look for it a little more. The video will help. If you find a copy of my Modern Drummer article, it could help. Taking lessons with me in person can help. These things can help smooth over the transition, so to speak.
Right.
But no, there's another option.
Okay, cool. That's excellent. We'll talk a little bit about your New York studios in a bit. But I want to ask you. Let's switch gears a little bit. Kind of talk about your musical preferences. When you were growing up, what were kind of the bands that you liked, and maybe the drummers that you admired the most growing up?
Yeah, great question. Well, like I said, I got into listening to music so young. I wasn't necessarily forming a lot of strong opinions about this band versus that band. I was kind of just hearing whatever was on the radio, which was top 40. So, I remember hearing bands like Journey and, Michael McDonald had some hits at the time. This would be in the mid to late 70s. And then I was in the early 80s. I was a huge Michael Jackson fan. I think
He had great drummers every time, all the time.
Oh, yeah. And, Billie Jean, right?
Right, exactly.
The groove is undeniable. And it's just bass on 1 and 3, snare on 2 and 4. It's the all-time basic classic rock groove. But as soon as you hear that, somehow it grabs you, So, and as I mentioned before, I also went through a phase where I was really into rap. I'm just old enough that I remember when rap basically was invented and first came on the scene, and there were songs like The Rapper's Delight and Grandmaster Flash, the Message, and Run DMC shortly after that, and the Fat Boys and these bands. So I was a really big rap fan, and although I didn't know at the time who played drums on those records, and I later found out a lot of it was a drum machine. But the point of the story is that I was listening to that music for a handful of years, and it really did end up influencing me, because the beat is just so prominent in that music. In fact, I've heard it said that the basic elements of music are melody, harmony, and rhythm. So
yep.
There's not much melody and there's not much harmony in rap. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying, stylistically, there's not much melody or harmony. So the rhythm naturally ends up becoming the prominent focus, the rhythm of the way they speak,
right.
The rhythm of the drums. And so that really influenced me a lot. So I was really like this, where music was concerned, I ended up becoming a person who was very focused on the rhythmic aspect. And then when I actually started playing drums, so to get to your question about the actual drummers that influenced me, when I actually started playing drums, I started really listening a lot to classic rock. So Led Zeppelin became my all-time favorite, and so John Bonham's drumming had a major influence on me. And then Neil Peart as well, and I listened to Rush for the first time. I think it was a 2112 album. It was the first I heard. I just couldn't believe it, because I'd never heard drums like that. In fact, I didn't even know that was a way of playing the drums. I just thought drums, you keep a beat and you play some fills and crashes occasionally. And then Neil Peart had this whole other thing of coming up with these intricate orchestrated parts. So
yeah, very compositional.
Very compositional. I think for that alone, he's one of the all-time geniuses of drumming. He basically came up with his own way of thinking about what a drummer even does in a song. So that's really amazing. I would say that John Bonham has ended up being a bigger influence on me. But you know, I was definitely a Neil Peart fan, Jeff Porcaro fan. I mean, I also, you know, believe it or not, Omar, I listen and enjoy a lot of music that you know, you wouldn't necessarily think of as like drummy music. You know, I mean, Jim Croce, famous folk singer, one of my favorite musical people of all time. You know, and it's got great drumming on it, in fact, you know, but it's, you know, but it's very tasteful groove drumming. There's nothing really what you think of as flashy or fancy. But if you read the liner notes, you find out that you're listening to Steve Gadd, another great favorite of mine. You're listening to Rick Murata, you know, guys like that. And, you know,
later. And those drummers are so difficult to imitate.
Yeah, exactly. They have to, exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the simpler a person plays, the more it comes down to just their feel and their note placement. You know, it's these small nuances that can be very difficult to replicate. But you know, if you're playing something flashy and then I play that same flashy thing, it will, you know, it'll come across that I've effectively imitated what you're playing, because there's, you know, in other words, when someone plays flashy, the core of it ends up being so obvious that it's easier to imitate. You listen to two drummers play bass on 1 and 3, snare on 2 and 4. It's sometimes hard to put your finger on what exactly is making these two beats sound different. They're playing the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
What about today? What drummers today influence you?
Oh man, you know, just so many great drummers. Simon Phillips, a great favorite of mine. You know, I living in New York, one of the best things I've, you know, been able to experience by living here is I get to go see these people live. You know, I've seen Simon Phillips in a relatively small jazz club a handful of times over the past couple of years. I've seen Steve Gadd numerous times in small jazz clubs. So, you know, those are two guys that made a big influence on me. Billy Cobham, I've seen him a handful of times. And, you know, I you said drummers of today. I realize these are guys that have been around for decades. But you know,
they're still around.
They're still around. Yeah. So still drummers of today. And, you know, and I see them. I've seen them very recently. And, you know, the truth is, too, there's been so much great music that's already happened. I don't usually end up listening to a lot of really brand new music, because I'm still trying to catch up on stuff from decades ago. I mean, I've just recently.
That's my dilemma too.
It's endless, man. There's so much. Yeah. There's so much stuff. I mean, once you start, you know, really going back through the record stack, you find out that, you know, there's all this stuff that you maybe never listened to or didn't listen to thoroughly. I've recently been revisiting old Fleetwood Mac, right? So this is one, you know, again, when I was a kid and I was sitting in front of the radio listening to Top 40, their songs would come on. All right, so now, just literally the past few weeks, I started listening to them again. And Mick Fleetwood, man, that guy is a great drummer.
I listen to them and I still can't figure out a lot of the things he's doing.
Yeah.
Can't figure it out.
Yeah. Exactly. And he's doing it with, you know, that indefinable thing, somewhat indefinable anyway, that we call feel. I mean, it's got a, you know, the groove immediately grabs you, you know, and something about the sound of the drums, the sound of the cymbals. So I've been listening to, you know, that's what I've been listening to the past few weeks, listening to Mick Fleetwood.
Yeah.
And, but you know, there's, you know, speaking of, you know, new drummers though, you know, there's this one girl, her name is Chloe. She plays in a band with her sister. The band is called Smoosh, of all things, S-M-O-O-S-H. I think they recently decided to change the project around, and now they call it Chaos. But, you know, I heard her because a student of mine brought it in. And so that's how I get exposed to a lot of, you know, quote-unquote new music. Students will bring in stuff that's been just released or stuff they've discovered, and I listen to it, and you know, some of it is really great. Again, I wish I had the time to investigate everything that's out there, but I'm still catching up on, you know, Fleetwood Mac, But but I could
From the 70s.
yeah, I'm still all right, so I'm like 4 decades behind catching up. But I do hear the new music from my students, and you know we take apart these songs quite frequently. And yeah, that was one one new drummer that really caught my ear, because she's a she's a young girl. She's like, I think maybe at this point she's 17 or 18 years old. But as soon as I heard her, I was kind of knocked out. Like I couldn't believe how creative the drumming was, and it's also got this really tremendous groove and everything. And I'm sure she's not the only one. There's probably a million amazing young up and coming drummers out there that I don't even know about. But but that's one that I heard through a student of mine that I was kind of impressed by.
That's great. And as far as the older stuff goes, I mean, Beethoven and Mozart, it's still good. That's centuries old, so
Good.
there's always something to learn from, no matter when when the music came up. Let's talk a little bit about your studios in New
All
York.
right.
What can students, tell us a little bit about that and what students can expect from your teaching style and what you offer there.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to mention, we didn't talk that much about it when I was telling you about getting into the drumming industry. I ended up talking about DCI music video a lot, and but I also want to mention that I started teaching drums in 1996. So this September, it's going to be 17 years. I'm teaching drums. The first 5 years, from 96 to 2001, I was teaching part time. So this would be like while I worked my day job at the Drummers Collective. There's also a year in there where I didn't teach at all. I just played drums full time for a living for about a year. But starting from 2001 to the present, teaching drum lessons has been my it's my full-time job. So I think that's one thing. I'm mentioning that because you asked what can a student expect taking lessons with me. I do think that's one thing that I bring to the table that is somewhat unusual, which is that I have an extreme amount of experience teaching drums at this point. I mean, doing it since 96 and full time. This is my full time job since 2001. I keep a page on each student. I have a folder of and a binder of student pages. So when someone comes in, I write their info, and then I write down every time we meet. I write down what we cover so that next time I see them, I know where we're at. And every couple of years, I'll count up the pages just because I'm curious to see how many students I've worked with. And at this point, I've worked with just about 500 students,
Wow,
Yeah,
yep.
pretty extreme. And I estimate that it's been, over 10,000 actual lesson hours. So there's a, an extreme amount of experience.
That includes professional drummers too.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, right. There's been lots and lots of beginner students, and then there's been, a pretty big number of people that are professional players, professional teachers. I told you, the one guy, it includes the one guy who's a drumming superstar. So it's like the whole range of levels and ages and and goals. So that's kind of fun. Actually, I'm laughing because it's actually what I say on my top of my website. It says like all ages, levels, and goals, and here I am saying it. But it's actually true. The students I teach, they kind of run the gamut. And I think in terms of what they can expect, my approach to drum teaching is that I want to bring the best out in each individual person. And I listen very, very carefully to what students say, to the way they say it, and I listen very carefully to the way they play, and I've developed over the years, I've developed a curriculum. There is a curriculum that I use as a jumping off point, because I think there are certain things that that are helpful for all drummers to learn. So of course we cover all the standard kinds of rhythms, and we cover rudiments and reading, and anything else that you would think just off the top of your head that drummers should know. We cover all of that, and I've got it mapped out in this very logical sequential system. But more importantly, I use that curriculum just as a jumping off point, so that I have something for the student to play and something for them to focus on while I sit there and I very carefully take in what they're doing, and I give them very personalized feedback. And that feedback could be anything from, you're playing the bass drum too loudly compared to the snare, or you're playing, you're not letting the sticks rebound. So it could be something very technical like that. Very often, yeah. It's more along the lines of, okay, I got that you played that crash, but I didn't really catch the reason you played it. Either it didn't seem to fit the music, or more importantly, because whether it fits the music would kind of be my opinion, right? But more importantly, when you played that crash, I didn't get the sense that you were behind it emotionally and mentally. So in other words, I didn't buy that you really meant it. So either leave it out because you don't mean it, or if you're going to play it, there needs to be a sense of deliberateness behind it so that I really believe that in your heart of hearts, you think that crash belonged there. And it's funny, just, telling that to a student can make all the difference. That student will now play the same groove, put the crash in the same place, but now suddenly it sounds
different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Getting them to play with conviction each note. Yeah. And knowing why they're doing that particular note is, it makes a world of difference.
You got it, man.
So where can they get more information from you online? Where could they go if they wanted to see what Matt Ritter can offer them?
Oh, great. Great question. I have a website. It's mattritterdrumlessons.com. That's probably the main place to find out information about me. It's got, everything about my teaching. It's also got a really lengthy frequently asked questions page. It's got, literally, I don't know, I'd say maybe 24 questions. You click on it and an entire paragraph pops up with the answer. So it's, so if you go to that website, you can basically find out anything you need to know about taking lessons with me, learning drums from me. And then, the next thing after that, I always tell people, is you got to try it out in person. You could read all you want about somebody on their website, or you can even read reviews. But you're not really going to know how it works for you unless you go try it yourself. And,
right.
That's the thing. I would tell people, come see me. We'll do a couple lessons. And if you think I can help you play drums better or enjoy drumming more, we'll keep going. If you don't think I can, then we can part ways,
Right. Very good. So that's very good information. So I'm going to have one more question for you, Matt. What's next for you? Do you have any goals or projects that you're at liberty to talk about? Or where do you see yourself going in the foreseeable future?
All right. Great question. One thing I've been thinking about this for years, and I'd like to make it happen, probably early 2014, is I'd like to put together a drum clinic presentation, and then make some calls and book it into stores, schools, wherever, and basically bring the Unburying the Beater stuff to people in person. And also have a chance to do some playing myself. I have the past few years I've been working on doing some drum solo pieces, kind of in the vein of like Max Roach used to do these concerts that were just drum. Literally, it would be him on a stage for an hour or whatever doing drum solo. So I've been working on some drum solo pieces, and with the Unburying the Beater stuff, I'd like to put it together into a clinic and take that around. I actually have this idea where I would take a person from the audience, bring them up on the stage, and right there in front of the rest of the crowd, teach them in 10 minutes or less how to do the basics of Unburying the Beater. Because I think one thing that people mistakenly come away with when they either read about my bass drum stuff or even perhaps if they watch the video, they come away with the idea that it's going to be hard, that it's going to be difficult, it's going to take a long time and a lot of practice. But, I have, since I've been teaching this so much, so much even since since after I did the video, I've had so many people I've taught this to. I've gotten better and better and better and better at teaching it to people very quickly. In fact, my record now is I can get somebody doing the basic stroke in less than 10 minutes. And I mean correctly and everything. Now, of course, if they want that to become second nature to them, then of course they got to practice it, you know, over the long haul. But
right.
But someone can come into my studio now, and by the time they leave the lesson, they can already do the basic stroke. And usually, like I said, I can do it in much less than a lesson. Maybe 15 minutes is the average, and I've occasionally been able to pull it off in 10 minutes or less. So I think it could be good to do, you know, to do some master classes and clinics where I bring one or two people up on the stage and I sit them down at the drums and I coach them through the movements and right there in front of the audience, have them execute the stroke correctly. And I think the effect would be that people would learn exactly how to think of it so that they could do it themselves. And also, hopefully they'd walk away thinking, I can do that. I saw a guy go up there and in 10 minutes he did it. So I can do it too.
Yep. Well, I would definitely look forward to that. If you ever came as far south as Atlanta, well, I'd definitely be there. So that would be something to look forward to.
Nice, man. It'd be good to meet you in person.
Sure. Well, Matt, I really, really appreciate the time that you've given us. We've been corresponding for like 2 or 3 years, actually.
I know.
And we actually never got to speak. So I'm very appreciative that we actually finally did. And I'm hoping that, you know, more and more people can definitely learn from Unburying the Beater. So I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Omar. It's been great to meet you too, man. I hope to meet you in person one time.
Excellent. So again, that was Matt Ritter, author of the instructional DVD, Unburying the Beater. And I want to thank you very much for joining us today. So for more information regarding Unburying the Beater DVD and other services that Matt offers, you can visit his website, mattritterdrumlessons.com, or you can visit theparadiddler.com where this interview is posted, and the links to his website will be posted where this interview will be posted. So thanks everybody for listening, and keep on drumming.